A drawn Lions test series, shared glory or a huge missed opportunity for rugby. We discuss moments of the season, including the highs of Chicago and the emotion so many months on after the passing of Anthony Foley. And James Downey tries to draw Rog out on the Munster coaching job. It's all coming up on The Hard Yards.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes, passionate about sport.
And Ringrose comes through. Oh. That is brilliant from Ringrose. Ringrose is going here. What a score.
I know what website you use most often, but it's a sister of YouTube.
Hi, Rob. Zeeb's here. Just want to discuss the captaincy next year.
He's calling.
I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
I say YouTube is probably YouTube.
You're listening to the Hard Yards Rugby Podcast on Sports Joe. Thank you so much for joining me this week. I'm Andy McGeady. Today in studio I have Ronan O'Gara, James Downey and Pat McCarry, and we've got a lot to get through. We've got the Lions to talk about, look back at the final test, look back at the series as a whole, look back at the moments of the entire rugby season and a wish list for next year. We're looking into the off-season. Some rugby players, they're looking ahead to... Well, what were you looking ahead to when you finished, James? Were you... Was it time to let loose straight to the nearest Domino's?
not far from it. Straight to the nearest airport and out. Pretty much once the season finished, I was on a plane somewhere. Yeah. Had a couple of weeks and switch off completely from rugby. You know, it was great to just change your, get your mindset away from it, forget about it, let the body heal up, and then they're giving you enough programs essentially where you'd have a week or two off and then you're straight back into it because you'd certain scores to get back and. Yeah, it wasn't much fun. Supposedly you weren't supposed to have the full time off.
As in the full time to do whatever you want.
Exactly. Yeah. Sometimes we had a bit of a variation now in it where you had 4 weeks off, come back, train for a week, and then you get a week off if you made your scores. Or I just decided to enjoy my 4 weeks and come back and not have that week off, so it was all right. It wasn't too bad.
What was it like for you, Rog?
I was just getting my thoughts together, listening to James. I recall a lot of tours.
Yeah.
And then obviously.
That's a real humble brag, isn't it?
No, because a lot of them involve New Zealand. And I remember 2003, I remember we specifically before the World Cup, we went to Tonga, Samoa. Certain players went home, a lot of the kind of so-called untouchables went home after the Australia game, I think. And we stayed on, and they're great memories. It got kind of more advanced every year, though, I think, in terms, as James alluded to, going back 15 years ago, it was brilliant. You could afford to do essentially what you wanted. And then for me, it was kind of pre-kids, post-kids, in terms of how your holiday would differentiate it. I can remember the only times of the year I used to read would be when I'd go away on holidays, and you could put away 10 books for 2 weeks when you just basically, I enjoyed sitting on a lounger by a pool and just taking in 10 hours of sun a day to just, because the vitamin D is good for the body to heal, and it was relaxing. But I think everyone knows that it's hard to beat a lad's holiday as well, and that's important that you go away with the fellas you play with. But that would only happen for 2 or 3 days and they were dead and you had to come home then.
So what changed once the kids arrived then? No, not as many books?
No, it was just obviously your own water. You have to be very, very...
I know what you mean.
You know, yeah. So it's a completely different holiday. But it's a different buzz also.
Yeah.
Probably obviously better, but if you want to recover, it's just different. But it's a really crucial part of the game, I think, especially now with... to focus so much on the players, every movement is nearly depending on who the players are, if they want it to be seen, it will be seen. You look at guys from England now that they're in Dubai at the minute on the holidays, and you can literally see what they're doing on the poolside. So things are changing, but the holidays is something that you really have to get right, because I've seen it now from a coaching point of view. Look at someone like Dan Carter, who didn't get a break and kind of tried to do 2 years continuous, and mentally and physically you just can't do that.
Was there any boys who kind of just went dark for a month or two, you just wouldn't hear from them at all, and they'd get back looking different, like a different animal when they got back from that bit of a breakaway? Or
Dennis Leamy was a good man to switch off, I think, and literally you'd be surprised. I don't know where he got it. Dennis from Cashel, but he gets to take the sun really well, and he comes back in pre-season. He'd have a little bit of a beer belly, no doubt. But, he'd still have the massive arms and an unbelievable Pat Spillane, a farmer's tan on him. People did different things, but that's the important thing about it. And especially in the team I played in Munster, everyone was so tight that we ended up going away lots of years. In 97, I think I did my leaving cert, and it was all, we all went to Santa Ponsa, and it was all Mick Galway, Brian Walsh, about 13 of the Munster team at that time, and we had just finished our leaving cert, so 8 of my fellas I was in school with, and basically the whole Munster team together, and it was like, I remember watching it, the rugby, and I was on the next Lions tour, and if you had thought, in 97 with the carry on that went on over there, it was literally 14 days solid from kind of a 1 o'clock start, keep going and roll over.
Yeah, no, that's not exactly
some introduction.
Yeah,
but that was the way it was. It was
exactly.
It was,
exactly.
You know, when we played Heineken Cup games in Limerick, like it was Saturday night, and then Sunday was automatically a bit of a party for everyone. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
And Monday was recover.
Yeah, and you look at the kind of kids now, and they're coming out, they're in academies from God knows what age, 15, 16 now. And are they missing out, do you reckon, by not having those weeks away? Because you can recall it straight away off the bat there. I can recall mine 2 weeks as well in Gran Canaria, and it's just one of those things, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, but you're right. But thankfully, from my point of view, there wasn't academies, it was AIL. And I think that's something that's playing those games is what's needed.
Right, let's look back at this last Lions test. We've got a 1-0 series. It's ended in a draw, 15-0 in the last game. Let's straight to it. Is a draw an okay way to end a series? Jimmy, how do you feel when you're looking at that?
I don't know. I suppose like everyone else, there's a bit of a, where are we? What's happening? Is there extra time?
How do we react?
Exactly. It was so surreal. It was extremely strange. And yeah, I don't know. Look, I haven't had a bit of time to look over it. I do think it's a good result, yeah. Considering you only have that time period to get these four nations together to produce a result against the top team in the world, yeah, 100%.
But as a way to end the series, if you were standing there at the end of the pitch, Rog, and you're there okay, can we keep going? You know, or is there...
Oh, yeah, I think it was an absolute massive opportunity missed by Rugby Union. I just think NRL Golden Point would have been fantastic. Imagine the excitement, because irrespective of who lost, they were still going to get credit out after what they've done, especially the Lions, I think.
Yeah.
But what the people needed, the public needed, I think rugby needed just a lift. It would have captured the attention of the world, I would think.
Oh, jeez, everyone would be going, listen, tune into this now, no matter what sport you're into.
Yeah, two boys, 10 minutes aside, they're going to settle it. You imagine, it wouldn't have been great.
Do you mean like a handshake at the end of the game, Reid and Warburton say,
imagine that.
Here, listen, lads.
just the two boys met up and were just like, do you want to just keep going? Because it would have been a chance for rugby to ascend. It's done well, got a lot of attention, but this would have made headlines everywhere and would have got people talking everywhere.
There is something strange about it. Rog, you mentioned last week that, everything about the Lions tour is so planned. Every excursion, everything. But they hadn't planned for what happens if there's a draw. Ends in a draw.
And even Warburton after said, I'm ready for extra time.
He said he was lashing the electrolytes into him because he just sort of presumed that you'd keep going.
Yeah, yeah. As you say, it's an opportunity missed, a huge one. And I'm sure not to be repeated again.
Yeah.
Because I think it was a dry ball too. And there was obviously New Zealand skills weren't good on the day. But I think it was an opportunity to show rugby at that stage. I think one of the defences would have been broken. It would have been unbelievable. I just think the value of the fan would have got out of watching it, and it would have just left a better taste in everyone's mouth. I think just everyone was kind of nearly deflated. It was like a loss for both teams as opposed to a hard-earned draw by both sides.
Do you think next point, next score to winner, kind of do it like that?
The drama that goes with that, if I watch a lot of Australian Rugby League, so the psychology involved in the team that's behind in normal time to get to a draw at the end of full time, and then it's winner takes all. So
yeah,
you've got to have an onus on basically, well, maybe because I have a huge fascination with drop goals or something, I think.
This is my time to shine, isn't it?
You could have, you know what I mean? You would have thought, you would have seen the complete contrast in styles. New Zealand would have gone for a try, I would say, with Farland, Sexton, Elliot Daly, perhaps, yeah, maybe, I don't know, but like that left peg has to be used. So it just, it brings all the mental games into play as well, and after 80 minutes it's so much harder to think, and the drama with that. Imagine if you'd missed two attempts each and it was still going on 18 minutes.
Yeah, but that was, if you think back to Johnny Wilkinson drop goal, that wasn't his first attempt.
Yeah, you know, which is often forgotten about.
Exactly, like that's what they were doing, and they went and went and they got it in the end. But yeah, it would have been a good contest.
And they used to have the kicks. Remember, I think Leicester played against Cardiff on and Johnny Murphy had a...
You're only trying to mention Johnny Murphy, James. That's not nice.
Oh, no, but pressure's right there, isn't it?
So. But the most experienced one too was Martin Williams.
Yeah.
And he's skillful, but I actually, he nearly hit the corner flag. Yeah, completely fell off it.
And Jordan Crane then saved Johnny's blushes there. So
what happened with Johnny's then? For, I suppose, for people, I always remember the Williams one, but I can't remember Johnny's one from...
Just go down to training and see what happens every other time he kicks it. That's what happened. He blew it off the corner flag.
But it was a good game, though. And looking back... That was 15-0, and I'll hold my hand up when it was, when the All Blacks started really playing in the first half. I was like, nah, like this Lions have had their day in the sun in the second test, they're going to get blown out, and I was completely wrong. That was a hell of a second half.
Yeah, they just did so well to stay in it, didn't they? Because it was the quick tap penalties again. They were just going at them. It was just like so similar to the first test, and Savea missed his chance. I think he missed two chances. Kane knocked on as well. I think the Barrett, like they think they had two just shelled chances with the try line there in front of them. They just kept digging in there, and somehow wasn't it 7-6 at one stage, and then they got the second try as well. Like, so it's to kind of stayed in there in the fight so good. Like, and again, yeah, a lot of people just, it was a shame the referee kind of, you know, everybody was talking about that at the end because it was such a great game, and I think the Lions can't regret as much because they didn't really have that chance. Whereas New Zealand blew the chance to kind of win it, like they gave up winning positions. But I don't think the Lions can be as upset. Like the thing I was kind of talking about, would be interesting to get the boys' take, is do you reckon if the two teams met again in a fourth test, did the Lions have their number at that stage? Would you have backed the Lions in a fourth?
Maybe that extra week, but maybe that extra week at the start, or and you wouldn't have had to need that fourth test, you know.
Just because you called the Lions last week doesn't mean you get another game.
So like, close, yeah. So close.
But the that call at the end, Roman Poirier, it was strange the way that happened. Like the decision or not, whether it was a penalty or a scrum, the mechanics of how that decision was made, was, it seemed odd. Calling to the TMO first, James.
Yeah, I think he's he second-guessed himself, didn't he, straight away? And if he's going to do that, yeah, he has to go upstairs. Then he can't. It was a strange finish, like so surreal.
TMO immediately backed up what he'd seen.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it was like, nah, at the scrum.
I know it's so disheartening for people to kind of see, you want to finish, and as Roger said, you want to get that. Someone's going to be elated and someone's not, you know. And but to have to go down to that, I guess he felt that pressure of, is it going to be this decision on just something so simple, and these guys have put so much work into this. And look, I'm completely overreading it now, but he second guessed himself straight away, and whatever was said to him as well, that he's questioned it and it's gone upstairs.
What do you think, Grunge, watching that?
The decision?
The process by which it actually came about, because we're always told, look, once the referee's made his call, he's made the call, you know. And if the TMO backed up that original call, suddenly it was a really strange one.
I would agree.
Suddenly the scrum.
I think his gut instinct was penalty.
Yeah.
He saw it live, and I think he saw it again, and the two of them thought penalty, and then all of a sudden, no penalty.
Yeah.
Irrespective of Ken Owens getting rid of it nearly simultaneously, he was in an offside position while holding the ball.
Yeah.
It's a penalty. But he said that it was an intent or a non-intentional...
He seems to, you know, I know second language and all that, but to try and find the words to say, no, lads, I'm giving the scrum. It just, it didn't sit well.
I've got a deal for you, wasn't it? It was like,
well, I think we'll forgive him that. You know, that's the second language part of it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But
Yeah, but I was just going to say, like, do you reckon, because he got a lot of praise after, like, are we reading too much into Warburton's captaincy?
A lot of praise this side of Warburton, but an awful lot of the, talking to a lot of the boys in racing this week, he got absolutely slaughtered in New Zealand. Yeah, because, you know, that's the way they are. It's like a draw for them is no good. It's a series loss is how they're looking upon it. So,
yeah.
They're not happy with Watt at all, you know, but I don't think he was the issue at all. The game, as you said, it was three try scoring opportunities, which normally they take, but I think people are forgetting too what who New Zealand played with in the back line as well, you know what I mean. I think you could really see the inexperience of the midfield. I don't think you know what I mean, they're a different team with Ben Smith,
Crotty, Sonny Bill out, though that was his own fault.
Yeah,
exactly.
They're making basic errors that you wouldn't actually see.
I'm glad you brought it up. In the first half alone, in the first phase, I think of the 8 of the 10 knock-ons were in the first phase. So you said the Lions were hanging in there, but actually for me it was that New Zealand were completely uncharacteristically inaccurate.
Even Surveyor, 4 minutes in, should have 9 times out of 10 will catch that and will score.
Or even 49 times out of 50, isn't it? Because it was
butchery.
But do you know what I mean? I think the philosophy changed with us, but if you don't score a try, you don't deserve to win a game. So the Lions didn't score a try. And I don't think you win big games by the boot alone. And that's been proven. So I thought there was some good collisions, but I thought New Zealand were rudderless. I didn't think Barrett, I thought he's exceptionally a threat, but you don't really want your 10 carrying the ball 50 times to the line.
Yeah, you said that last week
They were kind of playing over and back without really know how they were playing. And
but you think that's a reflection then on his midfield and the trust in his midfield? And
I think that's the way he plays a bit, but you know what I mean? I was kind of looking at, if you know what I mean, if you'd, and I'm not an old man going back, but if you put Carter, Nanu, or Conrad Smith, I just think their game intelligence is now being appreciated from what we've seen in these line series. Because another point that the lads in racing make is the fact that who are New Zealand's opposition? Australia, who are not a potent force at all, their club rugby is in dire straits, and South Africa and Argentina is the four nations. So I think it's good from people playing rugby this side of the world that our stock has really come up.
Okay, so let's go out of the last test and look at the series as a whole. James, you talked earlier on, this is a result for the Lions. A drawn series is still going down New Zealand. We never saw that coming. You know, we didn't see it coming.
Well, it comes in with your first point. That's why the extra time was never discussed, because it was never an issue I would see, even with the Blazers or with anyone in world rugby.
Yeah.
The fact that it was either going to be 2-1 on a bad day for New Zealand, or it was going to be 3-0 on an average day.
And a lot of people call it 3-0.
I'm sure you can go back to the bookies' odds on it, what that was at the start, and what a drawn series would have been.
We got Ladbrokes to look up, like, what would a completely winless series be for the Lions? What was it, like 500-1 or something?
The bleak days of April or May, I suppose.
We had Kevin McLaughlin in, and he was like, there was one day where he was like, I think the first game it happened, he was just like, this is going to be terrible. but it picked up, and you did see momentum come, you know, through that whole series. And the geography call-ups aside, Gatland stock is now higher than it was going in, and we couldn't have said that a month ago.
No, it's a results-based business, and he hasn't lost 3-0, and he's done all right, and he's done well, so he's going to be judged on that. I think people have even moved on from to geographical six or whatever, and he hasn't lost it, and he was getting called a clown and stuff back in New Zealand, and the papers were getting into him, and no way he's going to be involved. And now they're talking about him. Oh, will he be the next Lions coach again? And will he be back in 4 more years?
Yeah.
Like, has he been offered a job already? You know, and it's, look, his stock's up, and I'm sure, look, players will come back and have a different opinion on it. And if you're a dirt tracker or a midweek team, you'll have a different opinion of the coach, as opposed to if you're starting every test. And I don't know, seems to be a happy enough camp, so from what I know anyway.
If you're starting every test, then the coach is fantastic. you know.
But yeah, no, it's look, but it's as I say, it's results, and you got to look at it and take it from that. Same as a lot of his decisions, what he did along the way, certain players, and say with Peter Mahoney for one example. But
There's an interesting person there. He's kind of been forgotten. We did probably half a podcast on, you know, when he was given the captaincy for the first test.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it'll be interesting to see now the experience of camp for the next couple of weeks for Peter O'Mahony would be something to hear.
Yeah, because I was listening to the Rugby Union Weekly, the BBC podcast, and there were Chris Jones, who was over there, was saying the word he had got back was that O'Mahony had been absolutely brilliant for the last 2 weeks. Like, he immediately parked being disappointed about being dropped, and he was one of the best guys in training for the last couple of weeks. Like, and I don't know, like, it's, I suppose it's standard you expect, but you don't get that from every player, do you? Like, some guys might be a little bit brooding, but I suppose you guys both have come across O'Mahony. Does that surprise you at all?
No, I think I would say he's a smart guy. Sorry, I know he's a smart guy, and Warburton was picked as a tour captain for a reason, to play in the test game. So I think in the build up to obviously the first test, there was something that the management team liked about Peter, liked a lot. So that, with the balance of the way the back row was going, said, let's keep this continuity going. So that's why he was playing. But it was always going to be a long shot, for me anyway, that he was going to continue in the team. I think this is how it was picked for this game.
Yeah.
With the assumption that you empty the tank, I would say, for, you know what I mean, if you have a captain of the group on the bench, he's going to come in with probably 30 to go. It's exactly how it panned out. And he's going to start week two and week three. So I think Peter, in some positions, you're on automatic for the bench. With CJ Standard there, he was probably a better option for the bench. So in that regard, he lost out on it. And I think he's just got to be really mature and realistic how he looks upon it. He started the first test as a captain. The team lost. It's not his fault. Disappointing, but...
Oh, it's still an amazing achievement from where he was just before Jamie Heaslip got injured. In that England game. In the lead-up to the England game.
I was just going to say as well, like, just looking, because I was just seeing Rory Best, he's turning 35 now and next month in August. And do you reckon O'Mahony is lined up to be next Ireland captain? I know there was talk about that before he got injured in the World Cup. Like, would you bring him in now, or you just leave it with Rory? Because Rory's the number one hooker at the moment. There's no one to kind of challenge him at the moment. Do you just stay with that, or do you just kind of look ahead to the next World Cup? And
yeah, that's a good question, I think. But you can be sure, I'd say Joe has gone through every possible scenario in his head with the detail he goes about it. But I would say what's important now is that it'll probably be a clean slate, because in terms of the leadership group in Irish rugby, the two of them are probably there. You have a hungry Jamie Heaslip, who has an awful lot to prove. You look at the back row in the States and Japan, how well they played. There's such quality in the back row.
That's the toughest one, yeah.
I mean, Father Time catches everyone eventually, but Rory Best will be hungry after this Lions tour. I think for me, is Jamie George a better player than him? I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah.
But sometimes you get the benefit of selection, and you get kind of confidence from that, and then it just kind of happens, and it's very hard to replace the guy that's in there.
So on that subject of some of the Irish lines, we talked about a few there. The other, I suppose, the big winners, Sean O'Brien, Tyke Furlong, obviously a superb series. Jack McGrath did fine off the bench. Then there's a few who are kind of in the middle. Ian Henderson on another day could have been in those test squads instead of someone like Courtney Law's been brought in.
I think so. And you look at that game in the Gaeton.
Yeah.
Like, there looked like there was three of them.
Yeah, it was phenomenal.
And I think the rugby, or those kind of teams, suit them, because there's just so many opportunities to carry the ball, and he's front up and his footwork is so good.
Yeah.
For such a big guy, he's excellent footwork, and his capacity to play the ball over the tackle kind of makes him really suited to the New Zealand model. So I think he deep down knows too that he's he'll have tasted that. He knows that's the level, and I think he's going to explode next season. I think he's going to be fascinating.
And then a couple of lads who disappointing in Jared Payne and Robbie Henshaw, both for injury related reasons. Migraine injury, I'm paraphrasing, but you know what I mean. And Leinster going to be without Henshaw for a little while.
Yeah, it's like after even the Six Nations, you would have said Henshaw was, you know, the man you would have expected to start. If you would have looked in back then and said Ben Teo was going to be starting ahead of Henshaw, you would never have called that, because he was just on the bench for England. Henshaw would be kind of disappointed. And that Henderson at least got to show what he could do over there. But Henshaw never really got a chance, but he didn't really do anything amazing. So he'll be disappointed in that. Yeah. But he's young enough to 2021 come back and play on that tour.
Yeah. You're trying to get this in. We'll come back to that. And then Conor Murray as well.
Conor Murray, of course, the fellow beside me here will know everything that Conor can bring to a side, you know, and he'd produce everything that you'd expect from him, to be honest. His back kicks on the money. Kicked it out in the full when it needed to be, when you didn't want any quick counters, and marshal it well, I thought, to be honest, when they had chasing the game then a little bit and Reece Webb came on, is the right thing to do in terms of that last 20, just to bring that extra dynamic to it. But Connor's the best nine in the world at the moment. So
is it now clear, or did Aaron Smith have a good enough series that that he's back in the conversation again?
I think so. Maybe I'm a small bit biased, but yeah, no, I think he.
We have been called a little bit biased on the show.
No doubt. But no, I think everything he brings to it, and his leadership now, I think he's really stepped up over the past couple of years. He's been in there a while now, and he has to start producing consistently, and I think he's been the most consistent scrum half.
Okay, so last thing, when we're looking ahead to future Lions tours, do we want fewer games, more games? Is this about right? What do you reckon, James?
Just about right, but just that extra week, I guess, maybe.
It's been a week of preparation.
Yeah, 100%. They're going off sporadically. Some teams, they were out training a few weeks beforehand. They're in different countries. Teams are finishing separately. Then if someone gets injured, it's just very disjointed.
They were actually lucky that, Saracens, Leinster, those players who didn't get into their respective finals.
Exactly.
They got an extra week.
Exactly, and then you're talking, that's a lot of the squad in there as well, you know, and... I don't know, I can't remember what way Clive Woodward did it, but I don't know if you were on that one, Rog, were they in Pennyhill Park or something, and they did all that, whatever it was, team bonding, but I'm not sure if that
each player had their own gilded Concorde and flew individually. No. But yeah. but what do you think, Rog? Is this about right for Lions Tour? Do you, the big question is, do we need all of the midweek games, or should they take a smaller squad and just...
I think the whole purpose, or the goal of when you become a Lion, it doesn't become the test team and the midweek team. Some tours have failed on that and it's not good, but the whole thing about is whether you go on tour or not. Then obviously they have a bonus after that as becoming a test Lion. But I think it's about going to all the places around that country and seeing it for what it's worth, because every atmosphere in the grounds are very different and it's fantastic. And it's people kind of now it's easy for us after a three test series against New Zealand to knock the midweek games, but the midweek games are a crucial and fundamental part of Lions tours.
I thought they were good in this series, they were proper games.
Yeah, they are. I think at the start of a tour sometimes there's a mismatch. The first game of every Lions tour traditionally is a mismatch, but all the other games are competitive. But I think you need to be bringing big tours numbers, because if you're looking to play Wednesday, Saturday, the injuries toll up. And I think, speaking from being on three of them, I think it's they get a bit of a hard time, all this talk about the Lions tours, but it's every single player's dream to go on it. That's the bottom line. Playing for your country is brilliant, but from 18 to 24 months out, prior to South Africa, everyone will be talking about it again. That's what players want to do.
Or looking at Pat beside me, 4 years out, looking at 2021. Well, we won't go into that right now.
I was actually saying that I think Graham Henry came up with the idea and the home unions, or like the Ireland, England and Scotland, Wales would love this. It's the idea of the Lions being, you tour the Lions, like, you know, like New Zealand go to Europe and play the Lions, like it's
the, like the Lions at home.
Yeah, like you were saying, that would cut out some of the travelling time and stuff like that. And you
that don't be like the compromise rules that no one wants to go, no one wants to be selected for the home ones, and they all want to go, they want to, you know, the trip.
I would say that the way the game is changing at the minute, it's very possible. So you could have a test in Millennium Stadium, a test in Twickenham, and a test in the Aviva, and a test in Murrayfield, of course.
Midweek games, all the midweek games.
So we're back to four tests again, are
you? Yeah. Oh,
I'm sorry.
The possible four tests in Murrayfield. Yeah, right. Apologies to all the Scots. Right, we'll leave that one there and we'll be back in a few minutes.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes, passionate about sport.
We're back on The Hard Yards. Thanks for listening to the podcast today. If you're listening to this for the first time, subscribe to it on iTunes, Podcast Republic, SoundCloud and every good podcast app to get it straight to your phone. Right, we've looked back at the Lions test, the Lions tour. Now, the season as a whole, moments of the season. It's kind of weird to lift out of just Lions all the time, but there was a lot of good stuff last year. Henshaw's try in Chicago, is that the one that jumps out?
Yeah, I was saying Chicago definitely jumped out to me anyway, but for me, my moments where I thought we'd beaten the All Blacks, and the players on the pitch probably tell you different, and a lot of fans tell you different, was Zeebo's try after halftime, because I thought this is when we had them, this is when we were going to beat them, and then I was regretting those thoughts, but to get that try at the end, and it was the whole thing about Henshaw's try, it was the Jared Payne drawing in Savea, it was Zeebo kicking up the line, it was Murray doing the kick chase, the boys bundling him over, he slipped switch pass. It was just, and it was good rugby and it was well played, and it was absolutely brilliant moment then as well. And you can tell a lot of the players knew this is it, we've got this nailed as well. That was actually, I've got goosebumps talking about that there. I'll stop talking.
What do you reckon, James? Did in a season where Ireland beat the All Blacks, does it have to be that?
It's got to be up there, all right. Also, I think of Edison tragedy as well with Axel, you know, and just the way everyone responded to it, and like, just don't want to go on, but the whole of rugby or whatever, but like everyone got behind it, you know, and how the Munster lads reacted to things as well, you know, and in such tough circumstances.
Well, playing that Glasgow match, I mean, that was an extraordinary event.
Yeah,
I don't use the word event crassly, but you know, to actually be able to front up, pull together and do that, and then have that, I suppose, the circle on the pitch afterwards calling up the two sons, I mean, it was extraordinary.
Yeah.
Extraordinary emotion. I mean, Rod, you were there. No one will forget that for a long time.
No, it was being in that ground, it was difficult to be in the ground, never mind trying to play, and then Earls are getting a red card.
Yeah.
As opposed to the guy that it's weird in sport that would have been closest to Axel in that team, you know,
and
he feels frustrated and kicking a water bottle, that's my memory of the day as well, and it was fantastic to be there. I think there was just I've never talked about this and it's difficult to talk about it, but it was there was something beautiful about it as well, and I was next to John Kelly, who I played with for a number of years, and it was just everything you did in the red jersey, the memories came flowing back, and you could just picture Axel scoring in the right hand corner against Bear Ritz, getting his hat trick and free pizzas for life, and just everything that was good about my, it was a really hard day, because you know what I mean, the tissue was out of the pocket for a long period of that game, and it was so bizarre that it was, you know, I mean, I think as people say it, you cope with certain things differently, and I think for the players that have played with him, it hasn't hit us, you know. I think it's when is he going to come back into the dressing room, or when will he pick up the phone? So it's still too raw, I think, in terms of getting your head around it. But that was really nicely mentioned by James, I think, because you know, I mean, for me, it wouldn't even have come into my head that that happened this season, because I've lost the perspective of when this happened, but obviously that is it is the moment of the year. That performance, not by the team, I think. Sorry, by the team, but also by why the Munster supporters are known for their class.
Yeah,
and I think it was unbelievably good in a really sad way to see just everyone you played with, Munster, and obviously why they were there, and fellas like the two that stand out obviously are Golov and Claw, and just to see how broken they were, yet they could still smile, it was fantastic.
Yeah. I'm not really sure we should move on to sort of something like Sean O'Brien's try after that. It doesn't really seem apt. But it was one nice thing to come out of the Lions tour, but I think we'll leave the look back.
I think unfortunately it has to go on, but I think you're right, that Sean O'Brien try was a fantastic try.
I was jumping off my seat alone in a bar in Spain, and you know, on my
it
own,
great.
It just gave me joy.
I think too, from a pure Irish point of view, that it was Shawnee.
Yeah.
Because I think all of us associate with Shawnee because he's a tough warrior, and there's a lot of goodness in him. And it was brilliant it was him, because I think from people, maybe he kept it quiet enough, but Shawnee was nearly dead and buried, career over.
That's something which you've mentioned a couple of times, but like, how close was he to game over?
No, I think Pat knows more about it, the thing, but I know him, from, obviously friendly with him, but it was very close, and I think like everyone thinks the rugby players or athletes are bulletproof, but like we have more, or sorry, the players nowadays would have more gremlins than anyone, because if the hamstring's ripped off the bone or the hamstring, you can't just fix it.
Hmm.
That's it, you know what I mean? It's, you can try and do all the rehab, but if there's something not knitting, and then it just doesn't work for him, so it's like a damaged car that isn't roadworthy. It's the same as the way he plays. But I think it was great that he got the opportunity on the biggest stage to show, because there's knockers everywhere, and they say O'Brien is finished and O'Brien has passed it, and he's gets injured every time, and the game is too physical and that. But sure,
yeah, he's taken too many hits.
He had the last laugh. You know,
he was superb. Yeah, he was absolutely superb.
But as a moment in the series, even the Lions lost that match, it showed us that there's something here, that the Lions have something that perhaps we hadn't seen in previous ones. That, you know, Liam Williams chosen because he could do something like that from fullback and just go. It was brilliant. The whole thing was extraordinary.
Just thinking, like, you probably hadn't seen that since, like, that type of a moment since 2001 when O'Driscoll did that against Australia.
Yeah.
Like, that type of a moment where, like, holy shit, the Lions can play a bit of
the Lions are on, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Something to make the New Zealand media go, uh-oh.
Yeah.
You know. So we won't look back anymore. We'll look forward. So next season, right, we've got a lot of Irish players who've played a lot of continuous rugby, right? Now, flashing back to the off-season, James, would you be wanting to see some players take a break, or is it really just case by case here? Because you've had players, I mean, Sexton we know had a break, but he was banged up again on this tour.
Yeah, I think you have to take it individually, to be honest. Certain players might need a lot of time off, and it's a lot of individual work done now. I'm sure Rod will be able to allude to it there, that you're going to speak to each person and see how they're feeling, what their body's like, what they want to do, you know, and I think a lot of players now like to do completely switch off, get away from it, rest up the body, because some players have been on the go for nearly a year, and 4 or 5 weeks really isn't enough, to be honest. So they really have to be managed. I think the lucky thing about the Irish system is they're really managed well, and they're slowly eased back into it, but other countries wouldn't be as lucky as that now.
So I remember just talking to Sexton before the Claremont game in the Champions Cup, and putting the idea to him, like, listen, after this, if you get lucky enough to get in the Lions tour, how about 6 months off? How about just taking 6 months off? And he looked at me like I was just stupid, you know, like, and, like a lot of people look at me. But like, he looked at me, he was just like, no, like, and he started listing out, I was unlucky here, that wasn't anything big, I was only out for a week here, but you know, I'm not going anywhere again. So you wouldn't be surprised by just seeing him back for the you know, well in time for a couple of games ahead of the Champions Cup again. You know, he'll be back in September or something like that. I'd love to see him and O'Brien take a bit of time away, like the Kiwis do as well, and look ahead to the World Cup. Yeah, well, yeah. I'd love that. Like, if I had a wish list, I'd love to see a couple of those lads rested again. But then you've seen how competitive this Irish team is. There'll be a lad in there, you won't get your jersey back by the time you get back. So maybe that's what Sexton is seeing. Like, look at these two lads even at Leinster, like, you know, like Byrne and Carberry, like, who were ready to take your spot. So I don't know, would you guys be up for the idea of that? Like given your big players, you know, 5 or 6 months off?
As in a proper, you've planned for this, you know when it's going to happen.
Yeah, like Richie McCaw, go fly a glider somewhere.
Yeah, I think the Irish players are looked after so well.
Yeah.
Everything is planned, I think. And if you're a competitor, you want to play the games. What was happening, certain periods of our stage, of our career, we felt we were being underplayed.
Yeah.
You need 3 or 4 games to find form. It's hard to go into kind of one game, the Magnus Lee game, and then have Europe the following week, and they're saying, you know, because like usually, no matter how experienced you are, how good a player you are, you hit your straps after 4 or 5 games. Mm. And for me, I always loved playing kind of 3 of the 4 weeks.
Mm.
But in the Irish system, you nearly ended up playing 2 of the 4 weeks. They get incredibly well looked after, so like they'll have 4 weeks rest, I'd say, then they'll have a probably 10-week pre-season.
Yeah.
And yeah, after that, there's only so much pre-season you can do, you know what I mean? It's obviously ridiculously dangerous if you have a 2 or 3 week pre-season period.
Yeah.
But like after 2 months, there's only enough of fitness games and...
You need game time, yeah.
Well, yeah, you need to... Because so many fellas are good in training, but where you need to be good is in the game.
Mm.
And I think that's... I think that's how the Irish players are extremely well looked after.
Yeah. Wish list for next season, Pat, one thing.
Just to be able to go to Southern Kings against Treviso in the Pro 14 next season.
This is happening, is it?
Yeah, I'll be putting in to Noel McGarry there just to head down to South Africa to cover a game, I think. And, you know, I could imagine the answer would be go F yourself as well. But
look at the way it's changing now. Again, who would have thought even 6 months ago that you'd have 2 South Africans is this starting from this season?
No, well, hold on. So I looked, this is not happening yet.
Yeah. Right?
All we know is that there are teams that have been lost from Super Rugby.
2 definitely
gone. But we don't know how they mesh into the Pro 12, right? And we don't know if it's going to be the Pro 12. But let's say, put it this way, I looked at the show's sponsor, Ladbrokes odds, earlier on, and they do not have any mention of any South African sides in there. But the favourites are 6-4 Leinster, 5-2 Munster, and 5-1 Scarlets for next season's Pro 12 Grand Final. That's looking a long way ahead. On the subject of odds, Champions Cup, Saracens are clear favourites at 9-4 for the Champions Cup next year, with Toulon at 6-1. That's what we're looking at.
Yeah.
One wish for next season, James?
I'd like to see a bit of consistency actually down in Munster, just in terms of management and what goes on down there, because I suppose Erasmus is going now to 6 months, and it's quite frustrating, I suppose.
Would anyone jump to mind as a potential member of a coaching ticket?
Jeez, I don't know. I don't know if this fella's here in this room better suited to answer that now. No, not off the head. I think that they have to think about it properly. They've had a bit of disruption for the last few years, so I think they just need a bit of consistency now.
Raj, have you enjoyed your time in Paris?
I am really enjoying it, yeah. I know where this is going, but it's getting exciting there now, because it's obviously we've so much to prove. Kind of winning in the new camp is long forgotten. Last year it was nearly, as you said, with a 4-day pre-season, playing a game on the 5th day, you could understand why we didn't function. We still got to, our form in Europe was poor, that has to be addressed straight away, and we got to the semi-final beaten by Clermont, and we had good spirit at the end. So the longer you're in sport, I think that's really important, that you get that side of it right, and the technical side will come. But I am enjoying it, yeah, I am enjoying it. And in relation to Munster, it would obviously be something I'd be really interested, but the timing is nowhere near right.
So one wish for your season, apart from just winning, is there anything about French rugby or European rugby you'd want to change, do, see next year?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things. Obviously, that's, I think James used the word consistency. I think consistency needs to be applied to all of us as coaches, to consistently trying to get your players to perform hopefully it's a big ask, but you get consistency of refereeing performances. We can't be blaming the referees. They have a hard enough job as it is. I think it doesn't come down to their decision making that you win or lose games. But just consistency of preparation is something that interests me. I'm a big believer in terms of just preparing well during the week to perform on a Saturday. If you do that, I think you can sleep well on a Saturday night, irrespective of whether you get the result or right. But it was great to get 2 weeks in Irish camp to learn and now to see things a little bit differently.
Is there anything you're already thinking about putting into place at Racing?
Oh, God, yeah. It's already, yeah. Sure, we're in week two now.
Yeah.
How's Donnacha Ryan's French coming on, actually? That must be some wish.
Yeah, the thing about Donnacha is that he's a trier.
Yeah.
You know, and he loves a discussion. And at the minute the discussions are going in English, but you know him, he won't sit at one table at dinner time. He'll do the rounds. He's a great character and he's a very warm person. But he's trying to learn it. He's aggressively trying to learn it, and he has no choice to learn it. He's going to be calling the lineouts. So that won't be done in English, I wouldn't think, because of the variety of nationalities you've there. You know what I mean? So there has to be a common calling system among everyone.
Yeah.
So that'll be done in French. So. No, it's great that he's there now. I watched the Lions game with him the other day. So, and he's deeply intelligent.
And, okay, I want an update on his French now when the season kicks off.
I was going to ask, do you have one, Andy, then, for next season coming up?
I wouldn't mind them going back and have a look at that Alwyn Jones HIA.
Yeah, he was gone for more than 10 minutes, wasn't he?
He was gone for 21 minutes.
How is that even possible? That was allowed to slip? Yeah,
it's a high profile thing, and it should be, even if it was just a statement saying, look, you know, this isn't okay.
Yeah,
that I'd be okay with that. But
there was a few, because Reid, was that the same game? Reid stayed on the pitch.
Reid stayed on, but look, you have to be very careful about, you know, from the media point of view. Very few in the media are trained doctors.
Yeah.
Right? And they had independent doctors at that series, and you have to trust them, say, look, they made a call, there was no spotter, said he'd have to come ashore, whatever, right? But Alan Wynne-Jones was called ashore for HIA, and he did go back out after 21 minutes, and you are not supposed to be able to go back after you've spent 10 elapsed minutes off the field. This isn't game time minutes, mm-hmm. This is elapsed minutes. It's a medical thing, not a game thing, but it is there in law. So I would like something official come out on that, even if just say, look, you have to be careful with this stuff. That's all. But yeah, we are going to take a little bit of a break now, the Hard Yards. Thanks for listening all season. It's been a good run so far. We'll be back in August, where the Women's World Cup will have kicked off on August 9th in Dublin. Ireland Sevens should, after this weekend, also know they might have qualified for the Rugby World Cup Sevens. You were a former Sevens player, James, weren't you? Long time ago.
Long time ago.
Yourself, Andy Dunn, Chris Keane.
Of the greats.
Some crew for a night out.
Coached by Ryan Constable.
It was, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting times. I think we qualified for something, but then they brought in decent players for the Hong Kong series.
What was your endurance like, Jimmy? All right? because it's meant to be. I've never played, but it's meant to be lethal.
Did you never play sevens?
No. It is. It's horrendous, actually. It's horrendous.
I can imagine.
If you go a length, but we played it all wrong. Like we were playing it like 15s, and we didn't play it properly, which made a difference. We were playing it quite slow back then. So different game now.
Because the guys, it's very popular in France, obviously, with the World Circuit, and there's players that are signed up to contract to the FFR on the sevens thing, and they try and get. A lot of them now are trying to get contracts with top 14 clubs.
Yeah, they do it in reverse. The union signs them to play for sevens and then find a club afterwards.
It's they're all whippets now. You know what I mean? The only Veremi Vatakawa is a big union.
Non-whippet.
But like the loss of kgs from people playing the game is huge.
You're supposed to, I think you drop sort of 3 to 5, like it's a big drop to get down to get that sort of aerobic capacity for sevens.
You sure look at them, they're specimens and they're small guys, and I think there's going to be so many specialist sevens players who won't step anywhere near a 15s field.
No, you need a core, and then you can drop some other players in for development work or whatever you want to call it. But it's good to see an Irish men's sevens team back, because the women's have had a good run of sevens that's been used very well, I think, in the women's game.
I thought I was watching Reeling in the Ears the other day when I switched on the TV and I saw Fionn Carr playing live in the sevens. Name that year, 1999, Fionn Carr.
And you'll see it again this weekend. But we'll be back in August. The Women's World Cup will be in full flight. We will be probably talking about Leinster still being without the injured Guy Ringrose and Robbie Henshaw. But it's been a good run. Thanks very much for listening. Thanks to Rog, James and Pat. Thanks to Niamh Marr for producing, and Paul Donegan was on sound. We'll be taking a little break at the Hard Yards for a few weeks, so we'll see you in August. Thanks to Ladbrokes for sponsoring the show, and to Joe Harrington, the series producer. This has been the Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady. Have a great summer, and we'll talk to you soon.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes, passionate about sport.